container had become incredibly hot, humid, and stagnant. Nizar closed his eyes and tried to remain calm. Finally, after what seemed like days, Tasho nodded to Nizar that it was time to open the doors. Both men donned dark sunglasses. They each turned a crank that raised a metal panel inward, much the same way that residential windows functioned. A red cloth mesh that matched the outside paint of the container remained in place, allowing them to see out while limiting their exposure to all but the closest visual inspection. The air that rushed into the space felt like heaven, but even darkened by their sunglasses and the cloth screen, the light was blinding. The rifles were already positioned behind the openings, resting on their bipods and beanbag-like sandbags at the rear. Tasho and Nizar easily found the distinctive architecture of the colonnade in their scopes and made adjustments to their bodies and to the rifles until they found what was called a natural point of aim. Heat and moisture emanating from Nizar's breath and sweat-soaked forehead quickly fogged the rear lens of his scope. He wiped it hastily to clear the image. They had already dialed for elevation. The exact distance from their hide site to the target had been calculated and sent to them before they'd entered the container. They knew the precise width of the ship and its position against the pier. The wind was another story. It was blowing from the southwest, which made it almost full value. At this extreme distance, knowing the wind at the muzzle wasn't enough, as it could change multiple times between rifle and target. Fortunately, coastal winds such as these were fairly consistent, and there were few terrain features in their path to cause disturbances in the air. Tasho studied the visual mirage, the movement of the water below, the sway of the tall trees near the target, and even the flags mounted atop the pier's numerous cranes through his Swarovski spotting scope. As he studied each indicator, he began to build a picture of the wind call that would determine the success or failure of their mission.
"I've got something here, Andy."
It was Fabian, the computer expert who was supporting their frantic search for some shred of evidence that could assist the team on the ground in Odessa.
"What is it?"
"I've been searching known associates of Andrenov and bumping them against every database that we have. Yuri Vatutin is Andrenov's head of security and, like most of them, he's a former FSB commando. One of the men under his command in Chechnya was Grigory Isaev. There's a very similar name, Gregory Isay, on the Russian Federal Protective Service roster the Secret Service just emailed us. Isayev means son of Isay in Russian. I think it might be the same person."
The computer didn't match the names because it wasn't an exact match. "We run into this problem constantly with Muslim names, so it's something I think about. I've just never had to do it with Russians."
Denreb snatched the list from the analyst's hands. "Get Strain on the phone. Now!"
Chapter 82.
"Umbrella is 1 minute out."
"1 minute, Freddy. It's game time."
"Roger that."
The agency's sat phone vibrated just as the band fired up, playing whatever the Russian equivalent was to Hail to the Chief, as President Zubarov took the stage. Rhys held his hand over the radio earpiece on his left ear and put the phone up to his right.
"Donovan."
"It's Andy. We think one of the FSO agents served with Andrenov's head of security. His name is Gregory Isay."
"Say it again, Andy. It's really loud here."
"FSO agent Gregory Isay may be your shooter."
"Fuck."
Rhys communicated the name to Scheer, who made a radio call of her own. He then hit the transmit button on his radio.
"Freddy, FSO agent Gregory Isay could be our shooter. Scheer is finding out where he is."
Rhys and Freddy began frantically searching the rooftops as they waited for information from Scheer.
On nearly every high building, they saw a pair of figures staring through either binoculars or spotting scopes, scanning their assigned areas for threats. On the nearby roof of a pink and white corner building, Strain saw a Russian sniper with no sign of an American counterpart. He looked around for a path to the building from his high perch on the pedestrian bridge. The street below was too far to drop. He would break both his legs, if he were lucky. Running farther to the west, Freddy found what he was looking for and swung his slung HK416 behind his back and out of the way. He climbed over the bridge's 6-foot chain-link railing.
I'm too old for this.
He took a deep breath and dropped onto the tiled roof of a 2-story apartment building below. He half slid, half ran down the roof before dropping another floor down to the flat roof next door, twisting his ankle as he landed. Limping across the flat roof, he swung his legs over the side, finding the stone wall with the toe of his boot, and dropped 6 feet onto the roof of a Volvo sedan parked on the sidewalk. Hobbling across the intersection as fast as his tender ankle allowed him, with his weapon trained on the roofline, Freddy moved toward his new objective. Out of breath from the exertion, he keyed the mic button attached to his armor.
Reese, I'm headed to a building northwest of your position. I think that's where the shooter is.
Roger that. I'm having Shear send people there now to support. Freddy took the 3-doorway steps as fast as he could with his injured ankle and jerked on the wood-framed glass door. Locked. Without hesitation, he smashed through the glass with the suppressor and raked away the standing panes before stepping inside. The ground floor of the 3-story building was a clothing boutique that was dark except for the sunlight filtering through the canopied windows. Using the light mounted on his weapons rail, he located the unlocked back door and made entry. An old wooden stairway began at the end of the narrow hallway behind the door, and he moved as quickly as he could while searching the area above for potential threats.
Don't rush to your death.
Freddy had made his way up 4 flights of stairs and was turning the corner to approach the 3rd floor. It was dead quiet inside the building, but for the creaks of the stairs below his feet. It actually startled him when the radio came alive in his ear.
Freddy, the counter sniper at your location is not answering his radio call. Alpha Group is moving toward your location, but I doubt they're going to get there in time to help.
Freddy keyed his mic twice in understanding. Chapter 83. The lone figure standing on the rooftop was the sign that President Zubarov had taken the stage. The snipers couldn't distinguish facial features at such a distance, so everything depended on time, place, and the signal from inside the perimeter. It was time to take their shots. Tasho moved from the spotting scope to his rifle. He took a final look at the wind and decided to bracket the shot. Calling wind was as much an art as a science, especially at this distance. He would make one wind hold himself and give Nizar a slightly different hold, statistically increasing the chances that one of their shots would find its mark. Winds were tricky.
Confirm 12.9 mils of elevation. Nizar looked at the dial on top of the optic.
12.9 mils confirmed.
Hold 2.9 mils right.
2.9 mils right, Nizar repeated.
Ready.
Ready.
3, 2, 1. Boom!
The sound inside the container was deafening, the overpressure event of their shots reverberating through the enclosed space. The propellant gases from the muzzle blew the cloth screens off the openings before the bullets left the barrels. The copper projectiles exiting the muzzles at just under 3,000 feet per second. The bullet's arc took them high above the physical obstacles that lay beneath the container and the colonnade during their 3.171-second flight. Their total drop was over 970 inches from the muzzle to the target, accounted for by the 1,000-yard zero and elevation adjustments made in the scope. The 13-mile-per-hour west wind
pushed the bullets 221 inches laterally as they flew. Tasho had called the wind perfectly for his own shot, which meant that Nizar's 350-grain bullet smashed into one of the colonnade's pillars, showering the area with a puff of white dust that many onlookers mistook for an explosion. The Shishani's bullet created a different, grislier shower as it passed through President Zubarov's abdomen, sending blood, bone, bowel tissue, and digested matter across the stage. The bullet severed the Russian president's vertebrae, and gravity sent his body crashing downward before anyone knew what had happened. Even had the band's noise not drowned out the rifle's report or the bullet's sonic crack, he would have been on the ground before anyone heard it. Tasho and Nizar had completed their mission. Inshallah. It was time for the other shooter to complete his. Rhys saw the formation of agents moving toward the stage react instantly. Umbrella was shoved down and away from the stage by the agents closest to him. The crowd's confused cries transformed into panicked screams as the band members dropped their instruments and dove for cover. A team of black-clad counter-assault team agents wearing Kevlar body armor and helmets armed with KAC SR-16 carbines emerged from around the Vorontsov Palace and moved to dominate the terrain as Umbrella was rushed to safety by his detail. With POTUS out of the line of fire, Rhys turned his attention back to the Russian sniper that Freddy had seen standing alone on the roof. Unable to see him from his current vantage point, Rhys moved to higher ground. Freddy reached the roof level of the stairway, and not surprisingly, the door had been blocked. With no breaching equipment in his kit, Strain moved the selector switch on his carbine to full auto and emptied a magazine into the door, blasting the deadbolt and door jamb into splinters of wood and metal. He ejected the empty magazine, inserted a fresh one from his chest rig, and slapped the bolt stop before kicking the door open and taking the corner onto the roof. He moved quickly, since the element of surprise had been spoiled by the 30 brown tip rounds that he'd sent through the door. He stepped laterally and saw a pool of blood expanding across the flat metal roof. As he continued, he saw the source of the blood 10 yards away. The supine figure of the Secret Service agent assigned to the rooftop counter-sniper position. He wasn't moving. Freddy took another step to his right and saw the long barrel of a Russian sniper rifle turning to face him, the sniper rising from his knees as he turned. Freddy found the sniper in his scope and squeezed a half-dozen rapid-fire rounds into his torso, shooting him into the ground as he fell sideways onto the roof, his heavy rifle hitting the deck next to him. The SEAL fired 2 additional security rounds into the Russian's head and dashed forward to assess the wounds of the American agent.
"Rhys, we've got a man down up here. The threat is down, too. I say again, the threat is down. Over."
The Secret Service counter-sniper had been shot in the throat, undoubtedly by the suppressed Yarigin handgun lying on the roof beside the Russian sniper. Strain applied pressure to the American's wound. He could feel a faint pulse as he pressed on the source of the bleeding, bright red blood flowing between his fingers as he knelt beside the gravely wounded agent.
"Rhys, we need a medic on this roof ASAP. I've got a critical patient here. Over."
"I'm working on it, Freddy. Over." Nizar worked the bolt instinctively and loaded another round from the rifle's magazine. Per his orders, he transitioned his scope to the 3-story building to the right of the stage and corrected his elevation for the closer shot. He had already done the math on the wind and used the reticle to hold for the drift. His target was kneeling instead of in the prone position that Nizar expected, which made for an even easier target. He exhaled and began to take the slack out of the trigger. Rhys had lost sight of Freddy kneeling behind the roof's parapet wall, but from his elevated position, he had a view of the SUVs containing the Ukrainian Alpha Group assaulters headed to support. "Freddy, be advised the Alpha team is on your street. They'll have a medic with them, so just hold tight. Over."
Roger that, Reese. Is Umbrella safe?
Check. He's secure, Freddy. But President Zubarov is down. No idea where the shot came from, so stay down.
A chirping on the satellite phone alerted Reese to an incoming call.
Freddy, we have a call coming in on the secure line. Stand by.
His right hand squeezing the wounded agent's neck, Freddy reached his left hand up to activate his radio. Reese would never get a response.
Nizar felt the recoil and muzzle blast.
Russian down. Two Russians down.
He turned to face Tasho.
We did it, Tasho,
a smiling Nizar said.
That we did, Nizar.
The older sniper put his head back to his scope for one last look at the chaos they had created, and almost simultaneously felt a strange slap to the right side of his head. His face felt warm and wet as he turned back toward Nizar, wondering why he was having trouble seeing. Nizar fired two more rounds from the suppressed Stechkin pistol into his sniper partner's head, just as he had been instructed by General Yedid. A Chechen needed to be blamed for this. Nizar understood that he was an expendable asset, like the legend he had just killed. Today he was thankful that he wasn't Chechen. He wiped Tasho's blood from his eyes and saw his lifeless body slumped forward over his rifle in a pool of crimson.
The student bests the master.
His ears rang both from the suppressed rifle shots and from the even louder blast of the 9x18mm in the close confines of the container. The darkened steel box stank of sweat, blood, and burnt gunpowder. It was time to disappear.
Hello?
Reese said into the phone.
Mr. Strain?
The voice asked over the encrypted satellite link.
No, it's Donovan,
Reese answered.
Ah, Mr. Donovan, this is Dr. Bellinger. May I speak to Mr. Strain? It's an urgent matter.
You'll have to settle for me, Doc. Things just got crazy here.
Very well. Something didn't sit right with me on General Yadid's interrogation, so I spent some additional time with him. I'll spare you the details, but after some additional persuasion, I have something for you.
Tell me, but make it quick.
The snipers are not your only threat.
What?
Have you heard of the nerve agent Novichok?
I have. Isn't it what killed that Russian spy in London recently?
That is correct. The assassination in Great Britain was of a GRU agent named Sergei Skripal. The Russian government always denied any involvement. It would not be a stretch to think that it was a test of Novichok on an adversary of Andrenov. They would have known each other in the GRU, and remember, that was just a minute portion. Novichok is a binary compound that...
Binary? What does that mean? You need to mix it?
Yes. It was made to be stored in two parts in an attempt to bypass the chemical weapons convention. Combined, they are more toxic than VX or sarin. 7 to 10 times as lethal, to be precise. It was developed in Uzbekistan, but that facility was dismantled by international inspectors led by the United States in 1999. It was always suspected that those binary compounds were sent to Russia and Syria.
What are you telling me, Doc? That Yadid has a chemical weapons attack planned here?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Shit! Is there an antidote?
Reese asked urgently.
Atropine can counter the chemical, but the doses required are in and of themselves lethal.
How would they disperse it?
Airborne would be the most effective. Airspace is shut down. It's something else.
Stand by, Mr. Donovan. I'll ask our new source, General Yadid. Reese waited an excruciating few minutes while filling in Agent Shear on the latest development.
With everything you've told me, this makes sense, she said. The president is on his way back to the airfield. He'll be airborne in minutes.
Mr. Donovan,